La Meridian Pernina is home to Sir Henry Cotton's prestigious championship course. An idyllic layout that will test even the most avid golfer. The stunning parkland track is flanked by a series of streams, water hazards, and sweeping bunkers that lie in wait for your wayward shots. The equally manicured resort and academy courses offer a slightly less strenuous challenge, perfect for a warm-up round or a relaxing 18 holes with friends. The hotel is famous for its array of leisure facilities, from tennis to snooker to an Olympic-sized pool. The light and airy bedrooms, complete with inspiring views of the 360-acre estate, present a welcome oasis from the midday sun. You'll also find a range of culinary delights throughout the resort, from elegant formal dining to lively al fresco terraces. You're spoiled for choice at Pernina.
The Beatles were very much of their time. I will present as much context for their statements as I can, but there will be language and views expressed that may not fit with modern sensitivities. But this is 1969. Until they invent the time machine, these words remain unchangeable.
Good morning.
9, 8, 7,
this is roll
29, 4, 29. 3, 2, 1.
Don't operate under these conditions, boy. You know we're coming out.
It's like that. We're striking. That's what it is. It's like a strike.
And that's what we're going through now, really. Got to readjust to each other.
You know, I've got so many songs, but I've got like my quota of tunes for the next 10 years or album.
I won't lie, I'm not too good.
The winter of discontent with the Beatles.
Hello, and welcome to Winter of Discontent, the podcast that takes a deep dive into the recordings of the Beatles sessions for the Get Back project. My name is Nick. Join me now as we embark on this epic journey together.
Episode 50.
Welcome back to this milestone, episode 50 of the podcast. It's still January the 9th, 1969. The Beatles have returned from lunch and we'll eavesdrop on what they do next in a few minutes. The usual drill first. I'm going to recommend a book I haven't read yet, but by the time you hear this, it will be available. Kenneth Womack's Living the Beatles Legend, On the Road with the Fab Four. The Mal Evans story, sourced from Evans's own memoir, his diaries, audio recording and other documents. This is going to be essential reading, giving a legendary figure in the Beatles story a voice at long last. If you're a fan of this show, and I hope you are if you're listening to me, then you definitely need to check it out. Feedback for Series 6 has been very positive. As I write this, episode 47 has dropped and we have another review. Craig Will writes, "So pleased WadPod is back. The attention to detail, the backstories, the sense of inclusion and community are just some of the reasons why I love this pod unconditionally. Thanks, Nick." Craig is right. I do want us to be a community. If I miss something or get something wrong, if you have a new story or personal experience, get in touch via the socials and we'll solve this puzzle together. Happy to see the upbeat responses by Spotify listeners now that the app automatically asks you for your opinion. Feedback is always gratefully received, so to Rachel G and the anonymous me, thank you for responding. Thanks also to the generous WAD fans who left a tip in the jar at buymeacoffee.com/WADpod. So, to Clear Catra, enjoying her 40th birthday trips to London and Liverpool. George Dolan, who wrote, "Isn't it a wonder how prolific George was this month, coming in with the songs written the night before?" And the incredibly generous donation from Paul Schmitz, whose comments made me feel genuinely humbled. But more importantly, he loved the Nothing Is Real skit. Opinion was divided in the community, I noted, but of course, I have nothing but affection for that show and its deserved status as the number one Beatles pod. Thank you so much to all who contributed. I'm converting part of my bedroom to a studio space, so your support will help me get there. Let's catch up with the story so far. Continuing with their recap of completed songs, the Beatles run through Don't Let Me Down. Paul thinks they should set themselves up like they're on stage. John wants to know if they're using the same amps for the show, but George jokes they've still got to learn dance steps, and the subject is dropped. Mal shares an in-joke about tuning to the piano like the Shadows, which George finds hilarious. Looking at the piano, George likens the prominent Bluthner logo to the sponsors on racing cars. John counts in Don't Let Me Down, urging George to deliver a famous George Harrison intro. Instead, George kicks in his wah-wah pedal and makes a thin, weedy sound. John stops and asks him to try again. One run-through of Don't Let Me Down is all they need, despite fluffs with the lyrics. John immediately breaks into Susie's Parlour and the band fall in behind him for a very enjoyable performance. As Susie's Parlour finishes, John starts I've Got a Feeling. They play the whole thing through. They then spend a protracted period with Paul trying to teach George the descending phrase on guitar that follows the middle section. Eventually, they give up trying to get the effect Paul wants, and George reassures him that it'll be all right on the night. Paul complains that George's amp is too loud, but George doesn't want to affect his guitar tone, so it remains loud. They play the song through once more and then move on to One After 909, which they play through once with John comically referring to Glyn Johns as short ass. George reminds Paul of what they rehearsed yesterday and then remembers the one about the window. John moves over to piano for She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. Paul and he trade mock stage announcements, and George plays the guitar part to Norwegian Wood. A run-through of Bathroom Window is followed by a plodding version of Bebopalula while Glyn fiddles with the mics. John launches into a parody version of Bathroom Window with interjections from Paul, who is audibly delighted to have the old John back. Paul jokes about Tuesday being on the phone. A quick jam turns into a slow, languid version of the song. Then they play through the song once more, with Felix, as John puts it. Satisfied with their work so far, they break for lunch. Perhaps they listen to some of Glyn's recordings during the break. Who knows? We rejoin them now in good spirits after some refreshments. The Beatles return from lunch. When the tape is turned back on, they're already in position in the rehearsal space. Paul whoops into his mic to trigger the Binson echo.
Roll 96, Slate 183, sync camera A.
George asks Paul about rehearsing that tune. That tune, which they may have been discussing before the tape was switched on, will become Get Back. Paul plays through what few lyrics he has.
The only words I've got are... Thought she was a woman, but she was another man.
John and Ringo come in for the chorus. John's guitar is ridiculously loud.
Oh, get back! Get back!
Interestingly, he's already playing an embryonic version of his final part. Glyn is adjusting the balance. George's guitar comes in at this point, easily identified by the presence of wah-wah. For once, Paul doesn't have a fixed idea of how the song should go, allowing his bandmates the freedom to develop their individual parts.
We might get it into something with words, but we'll just keep doing it just like that. Though.
It started off like that. It's something about I left my home and Arizona. Da, 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 da.
I'll say, get back, get back.
Get back to where you once belonged.
George queries the words to the chorus, which admittedly seem a little weak when read aloud. Just for a second there, you can hear Ringo introduce the galloping drum part. Good to hear John playing so freely. He's often criticised as a guitarist, but he really can drive the band. Another pass at Get Back, Paul improvising the words. After the verses, they jam the rest of the performance.
About going away, and then the chorus says get back. So I just actually, it's not about anything. Hello.
Yeah, we'll just have those words, just words that like a Caledonian mission. They're just nothing about anything, it's just like rubbish.
Paul and George discuss how the words don't need to mean anything. George likens it to the band's Caledonian mission. Caledonia Mission is the fourth track on the band's Music from Big Pink. As George points out, the lyrics are deliberately obscure. They appear to be chosen largely to fit a rhyming scheme rather than for their actual meaning. Phrases like, it's so strange to arrange it, you know I wouldn't change it, but hear me, if you're near me, can I just rearrange it, flow well but don't advance the story in any way. The impression is of some white knight saving a girl from a cult, which just goes to show you how wrong you can be. The song is actually about, as Lee Von Helm put it,
a little problem we had with the lore a few years back.
Peter Viney has written an excellent blog post on the story behind the song. In it, he includes quotes that explain the incident that inspired it. Rick Danko said,
we got set up. This guy was trying to impress my girlfriend. None of us would have known him. But he knew what time we were coming through the border that day, and he told the Royal Canadian Mounted Police that we were bringing a trunk full of pot.
Lee Von Helm added,
the cops were real proud of themselves. They told us how they had picked us up at the border and followed us all the way into Toronto.
So despite obscuring the tale to the point of unrecognizability, Caledonia Mission is based on true events. Get Back, on the other hand, is another of Paul's fictional character songs like Eleanor Rigby or Obla Di Obla Da or Maxwell's Silver Hammer.
As long as it's narrative to say.
Paul's early first verse is in the first person. The second verse about a Puerto Rican man. The third verse about a Pakistani friend.
The elephant in Tucson, Arizona, but I thought it couldn't last.
He then tries to expand on the last two themes. Glyn can be heard saying something about it needing a good start, more planned. George suggests it starts with the bass.
He'd just have to start bassing and they'd come.
Now a fourth verse about a cross-dressing character facing similar hardships. The cross-dressing character becomes Louisa. This has been recorded as Teresa in some commentaries.
Louisa was the one, thought she was a woman, but she was another.
The protagonist in the first verse is becoming someone called Joe.
Johnny Joey left his home in Arizona.
Sidi Abdul Rami and Alberto Marin spring from Paul's fertile mind.
Sidi Abdul Rami was a Pakistani, but he came to live. This could be John saying, "Don't want a black man."
Want a black man.
And Paul, in a mock calypso voice, riffs this infamous line.
Don't dig no Pakistanis taking all the people's jobs.
The jam picks up again.
Get back! Get back! Get back to where you once belong.
Paul really stretching his vocal cords here. We mustn't forget Linda is watching.
Get back! Get back to where you once belong.
This won't be the only time we look at the song Get Back. At this point, it's very much a work in progress, but most notably, despite originating with Paul, the song has become also very much a group effort. As such, we have a potpourri of influences all tossed together into a fragrant blend of lyrical ideas. At its inception on the 7th of January, Paul acknowledges the influence of Jackie Lomax on his vocal style while singing the chorus. But it's a line from George Harrison's own song, Sour Milk Sea, as sung by Jackie Lomax, Get Back to Where You Should Be, that is the main inspiration for that hook. So far, the song is based entirely around two chords, an alternating A major and D major, initially strummed by Paul on his Hofner bass. These root fifth power chords were a device often used by Paul and are quite distinctive to him. From the opening notes of I Wanna Hold Your Hand to the play out of What You're Doing on Beatles for Sale to the aggressive Fender Jazz sound on While My Guitar Gently Weeps, Paul used chords on the bass to add extra grit to a backing track. John's spiky guitar stabs create accents to the song's chorus, answering Paul's vocal lines and inspiring Ringo to add cymbal crashes. The G to D crescendo at the end of the chorus is not here yet, but John's contribution is leading the band to that point. Just not yet. A lot of the final lyrics are already present, having just tumbled out of Paul while improvising. The lines, thought she was a woman but she was another man, and say she's got it coming but she gets it while she can, will remain intact. Tucson, Arizona makes an appearance, as does California Grass. The characters Paul is creating for each verse so far are protagonists who face rejection for various reasons. In this January 9th version of Get Back, we have four fictional creations facing hardship. Joe, being told to get back for possessing pot. Transvestite or transsexual Louisa, rejected by the other girls. Alberto Marin, a Puerto Rican immigrant. And Sidi Abdul Rami, facing prejudice for being Pakistani. Given this context, the controversial lyrics of Get Back make more sense. These are heroes, not villains. As Paul put it in a later interview,
there were a couple of verses in Get Back which were not racist at all. They were anti-racist.
The Puerto Rican reference was possibly inspired by last night's TV documentary Man Alive about Cuban refugees coming to America. The Pakistani reference may be inspired by the Daily Mirror cover story about Britain refusing to ease its immigration restrictions to take in extra Asian migrants from East Africa. And as we now know, the TV show High Chaparral seems to be the inspiration for Tucson, Arizona, so Paul is drawing inspiration from many sources. Glyn can be heard in the background asking about another song which George identifies as Let It Be, or as Paul currently calls it, Mother Mary.
I don't know, I was thinking, yeah. Well, maybe, you know. See, it may be great on the end of that, you know, because I've only got like two verses for that one. Yeah.
It'll be great on that, but the bit's so nice that you take that and use it.
And use it as well. Just on the end of Mother Mary, there's like a riff, you know.
George asked Paul how to phrase the descending section of Let It Be.
What's the timing of that?
George asks where Michael is. He wonders if they could do individual set pieces for each song as opposed to a continuous piece. For once, he's showing interest in the production.
Yeah, if we are in a groovy location place, and if there's just people and we're just playing anyway, that we can make the show up out of different bits and pieces of what we've done, or we have to do it in one consecutive piece.
John thinks they could do both, and George laughs at the idea of a dress rehearsal. In the end, they do perform two setups, as we know, the rooftop and then a studio performance the following day. John also suggests if there's anybody who plays piano, they could get them up on stage too.
It's not thinking to do both, is it? We'd set one day when we said this is the show, but we'd do a dress rehearsal and another rehearsal.
Dress rehearsal?
Well, you know, like we'd do it as is. We'd try and do it one through.
Okay, the one like.
We should do it about three times. Probably the middle one will be. Have the most.
But if it was really like this.
And then see if there's anybody around that played piano or anything, we just get them up, you know, let's have a gig.
John plays what sounds like the guitar intro to Carl Perkins' Your True Love, which the band have played already in these sessions on the 3rd of January. But it said the Beatles drift into some noodling, gradually given some shape by Ringo's drumming. Complains of a headache. George says, get an aspirin. Paul then relates a story reported by William Hickey about a song that he'd donated to a band in a hotel in Portugal.
See the bit of the paper where it says, turn them out, me giving a song to some group in William Hickey's. You read William Hickey. But I gave a song to this group where I sort of turned up in Portugal because I turned up pissed out of school one night and I wanted some drink in this hotel, you know, about 12, and I sat in on drums and and they said, give us a song, you know. So I said, okay. A, F, shit, you know, do it. So it's, I've been Albufeira. And we had a great time there, you know, and it was all one of them. And so, yeah, right, but they said, so they, and it was all, it was called La Panina, which is the name of the hotel, you know. And I ended up in La Panina, La Panina. And they were all digging and singing along, and it was good, you know. It was, in, it was one of those, it was right, you know. I've been to Albufeira, had a few drinks there. But I know they've been, I don't care. And La Panina, you know. And so they said, and so and William Hickey said he's given away this £20,000 song or something. But then, just at the end of it, just was a, Derek Taylor said, it's not that you gave away a song, you gave away more of a riff for them to build around, you know.
He then refers again to the allegation that the song Obla Di Obla Da was borrowed from Jimmy Scott, which they previously discussed on the third. His response is one word with four letters.
So he gave away a riff, and he just says, currently Lennon McCartney are doing quite well out of a riff they borrowed from Jimmy Scott, Obla Di Obla Da, which is top of the charts. Cunts. But I mean, a riff we didn't know. Riff is like, that's where you write something for a riff. But like, you don't say hello, and you haven't got a riff when you say hello. That's the riff I got off Jimmy Scott. Those two words, you know. Really think he'd sort of taken his life. It's not as though he wrote the song. You know.
Full credit to the book, The Songs the Beatles Gave Away, and to the They May Be Parted blog for the next bit. While holidaying in Portugal with Beatles biographer Hunter Davies, Paul McCartney and Linda Eastman paid a visit to a bar on a hotel resort called Penina. This was late on the 18th of December 1968, going into the early hours of the 19th. They were attracted by the sound of the hotel band, a Portuguese quartet called Yota Hehi, all students from Porto. The band were all amazed to find themselves in the presence of a real live Beatle, and even more astounded when said Beatle asked if he could sit in on drums. At first, the band tried to get him to play along to some Beatles tunes, but Paul was much more interested in learning some traditional Portuguese music. They obliged, and Paul cheerfully played along under their direction while Linda dozed on a bench in the bar. It wasn't long before Yota Hehi's leader, Anibal Cunha, plucked up the courage to ask McCartney if he had any songs that they could use. From behind the kit, Paul improvised a simple tune based on his chords for She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. Daily Express columnist William Hickey picks up on the story in the following article that Paul had clearly read over breakfast on the 9th of January.
Beatle Paul writes a £20,000 holiday tip. In one of those spontaneous gestures for which the Beatles are well known, Paul McCartney is making an escudo millionaire out of a Portuguese bandleader. It all started during the 26-year-old Bachelor Beatles New Year holiday in Portugal's Algarve. McCartney had spent an evening listening to the resident band at the resort's luxury Penina Golf Hotel. He decided to give a tip in appreciation and composed a few bars called Penina for the lucky bandleader, Anibal Cunha. To help them along, McCartney beat out the rhythm on the drums. As the shareholders of Northern Songs, currently standing at 33 shillings a share, know, Paul McCartney compositions never fail to net £20,000 at the very least. But before they rush to call an extraordinary shareholders meeting to ask about their percentage from Penina, they may care to note the view of Paul's business associate, Derek Taylor, of the Beatles firm, Apple. Naturally, he has obligations to his shareholders and fellow directors, says Mr. Taylor. One of the sad facts of life is that he is in business. But this was not a whole song he gave to the bandleader. It was more a riff. A riff in the trade is the name given to a repeated musical phrase coupled with a suggested rhythm. Northern Song shareholders, in fact, are presently benefiting from a riff, Obla Di Obla Da, John Lennon and Paul McCartney borrowed from another performer, Jimmy Scott. The Marmalade version of this song topped the hit parade last week for the first time.
Sadly for Yota Hehi, Paul's lawyers, Stevenson, Harhood and Tatum, also read the Hickey article and informed the band that, despite what he may think, Paul McCartney cannot just give songs away. Penina was the property of Northern Songs. An agreement was reached and Yota Hehi released their version of Penina that summer and went on to have a worldwide smash. Well, actually no. The song, despite its McCartney credit, failed to chart. Worse still, Yota Hehi were pipped at the post by two-time Eurovision entrant Carlos Mendes, who was also a member of the popular Portuguese band The Sheiks, who were signed to Parlophone in Portugal, and his inside connections alerted Mendes to Paul's giveaway song, and it appears he got his version released ahead of Yota Hehi. Such was the quality of this Paul McCartney original. Carlos Mendez's version also failed to score a hit. Annabel Kuna was quoted in July 1969 stating,
"One thing to regret, and we must involve the name of Paul McCartney and the friendship he gave us. But in truth, he also forced us to do so, and in a letter he sent us, he tells us categorically, use my name without hesitation. Let it be used for your publication."
But it was all to no avail. Proof, I guess, that not everything a Beatle touched would turn to gold. We then get a rendition of Panina, which bears a resemblance to She Came In Through the Bathroom Window.
I've been to Albufeira, I had a few drinks there, and now I'm on my way home, I really don't care, and I've been Panina.
Paul suggests they do something. John responds, "Do something," which turns into a brief jam.
Okay, should we do something?
John to do your thing. His thing happens to be Across the Universe.
Do your thing.
Very distantly, I can just make out John making a mock announcement off mic. What I can hear is Cats and Kittens and Take This Trip With Me. He then introduces the next song.
Entourage and their 50 press officers. But they're just breaking into a number called Across the Unicorn.
John starts the intro and then remembers he'd passed that over to George.
Are you doing it? Aren't
John laughs at the slow tempo, but Yoko thinks it's nice like that. Paul says he's just had a memo from Mal.
He Take says up. Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. Dear Apple, they slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. It's signed Jai Guru Deva.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they make their way across the universe.
Tape cuts.
9053.
Joan Littlewood, Esquire.
Joan Littlewood was a theatre director best known at this time for the production of Oh, What a Lovely War, the show which featured Victor Spinetti in a role as a drill sergeant, which he would reprise in the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour. John leads them into a fast-tempo comedy version of Across the Universe. Audio here.
Change my world.
George has reservations about Paul's harmony part.
Yes. The harmony. Jesus, I don't like the harmony.
George is working out a melodic guitar part in this section. John and Paul ask George what bit of the harmony he doesn't like. Paul says defensively he was planning on improving his harmony.
What didn't you like about his harmony?
Just in some places.
Some places. Ah, well, that's details, George, which we're yet to overcome.
Please specify, then. Please specify.
It sounds like it's forced in a lot of places.
Yeah, especially in the... Nothing's gonna change my world.
Just sing that in unison. Nothing's gonna...
I was planning on working on those bits anyway. Planning on working on the sort of... It was an oriental influence, the shouldn't really be there.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into paper cup.
Another sped up version. John's attention span is rather short.
Possessing and caressing me.
John asked George to do a high harmony, not usually his part in the vocal stack.
Can you do a top harmony on J Guru Dave? What would it be? It's very high, isn't it?
J Guru Dave!
Is that a bit much?
Alluding to the amphitheatre idea, George says he could do it in the desert, in the open air. Tape cuts again.
A lot babaluma, a big bamboo.
And again. Funny audio slate too.
187 sync camera A.
As they jam out a kind of bossa nova rhythm, Paul sings a bit of his song, Teddy Boy. He indicates that the rest of the band have heard this song before.
Ted be good. He would. Remember that one. And Junk.
He then reminds them of his song of a similar vintage, Junk, which he then proceeds to sing in mock French, with John joining in.
Ypsilon, Molopon, Galeton, Partu. Je les parle des ponts de Cannes. Je sais pas, Éléphant, parachute, qui les chante.
Another run through. The uneven meter throws Ringo for a second. The extra harmony from George is almost celestial. Paul is emulating the female vocals on their 1968 recording. John wants a full ending at the end of each chorus.
Across the universe.
But once Johnny's dictating parts to George and Ringo, a big improvement on his behaviour earlier in the session.
I think nothing's going to change my world with something. We've got to do something to it.
Change my world. Change your style there, because on the others you're doing that, aren't you, sort of? Something. It's gonna change my world. Something heavier. No, because that's like the cat, the chorus now. There. Just playing on beat there. Try doing the on beat on the snare. Just to make... push it along. Just do the same on your on beat. Only do it on beat. It's gonna change my world. Nothing's gonna change my world.
A faster tempo, which he's not wrong about. George obliges.
Let's do something else then. Let's do this one a little bit faster.
Ringo has his part down and George is trying something heavier on guitar.
Nothing's gonna change my world.
That sounds like a loose connection somewhere. John does a mock Scottish accent, evidently growing a bit bored.
Sounds of laughter, shades of life are ringing through my blue, exciting and inviting. Nothing's gonna change my world.
Brief improvised song, Shaking in the 60s, based on the book we covered in episode 38.
Shaking in the 60s! Shaking in the 60s! Shaking in the 60s! Shaking in the 60s! Shaking in the 60s with the book bought by Dick James!
We'll leave them here. Perhaps you can give that episode a re-listen in the meantime. And that's it. If you want to support the show, you can leave a tip at buymeacoffee.com/wodpod. That's WODPOD. You can also interact with me on the socials, Facebook and Instagram, and Twitter, plus my Gmail, all titled Winter of Discontent Pod. Please like and subscribe and leave a review. It really helps other people find us. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.